to Shattering Myths, our number, if you'd like to engage in this discussion. And we're going to continue to listen to what Yahweh has to say about matzah on yeasted bread. It is 877-300-7645. Picking up where we left off on Friday, Yah said, carefully examine, closely consider, focus so that you can observe. This is from Shamar. Pay attention to, keep your eyes focused upon these things which are associated with matzah, with unyeasted bread. It is the instruction that God gives us over and over and over again. You know, in religions, the notion is based upon Pauline doctrine, you should pray without ceasing. In Islam, it is, you know, five times a day you get on your knees and you say some repetitive lines, moon God, while pointing your head down towards Satan. It is the bane of religion that that the religious God has been conceived in such a way that either you bow down to him, as Muslims do, or you babble to him incessantly, telling this God everything you want from him. That isn't the way it works. Now, the real God said, I look at those who are not terror observant, who pray, and what I see is dung on their faces. He thinks that those who are babbling to him, telling him everything that they want, are repulsive. And he should. God has constantly told us that if you want to engage in a relationship with him, if you want the benefits that he is in position to give, that he has offered to give, you don't say, hey, God, I want to make $1 million by winning the lottery. I promise to give you some of it, and I really want to meet and to be able to date the prettiest girl in the world. God's saying, that's repulsive. It's not what I'm willing to offer you. Why aren't you willing to consider who I am first? Why don't you first get to know me, and then why don't you listen to what I am offering? And then once you know who I am and understand what I am offering, why don't you respond? But that's the antithesis of the religious mindset. God has said, carefully examine, closely consider, observe the things which are associated with, in this case, matzah, which you can, the only way to do is to observe the Torah. It's where matzah is presented. It's the only way that you can do what God is encouraging you to do. And once you come to understand what matzah is offering, you're in a position to capitalize upon it. You don't have to tell God, you know, forgive my sins. What you have to do is understand that that's the purpose of matzah. And when God invites you to attend this festival for the express purpose of making you perfect, you attend. You accept the invitation. You don't have to ask God to forgive your sins. God has already created the means to forgive them. Embrace it. Celebrate it. It means this forgive my sins is utterly ridiculous. It's already been done. He's made the promise. It's based on matzah. That's why he wants us to closely examine and carefully consider, observing all the things which are associated with matzah, unyeasted bread. He says, because on this essential and foundational day, this is from Asim. Asim is the word in Hebrew that speaks of our skeleton, the skeletal structure of human life. And he's talking about matzah as being so essential that it is the very skeleton that the ligaments and flesh are hung. This is the foundational day that your host, your multitudes, who were forced to serve under the command of a leader, were brought from the realm of the crucible of Egypt. You see, Passover, in its initial celebration, the Israelites didn't leave Egypt on Passover. Passover was all about sparing the lives of their children. While the lives of children who did not observe Passover were not spared. Matzah was the day of freedom. It was the day that the Israelites were allowed to leave the crucible of Mitzrayim, the place of great religious and political, military and economic oppression. Matzah is our ticket to freedom. We are not only freed from sin, but with matzah we enjoy enormous freedom. We are no longer slaves to our sin. We are no longer slaves to religion and politics. With matzah, we are free of all of these things. It is the liberating day. I am editing Questioning Paul now, a book that I wrote several years ago. And Paul's constant animosity at the Torah is always presented as the Torah is that which enslaves. But no, God is telling us exactly the opposite. It's the Torah that liberates us from slavery. This is the day, matzah, when you were brought out from the realm of the crucible of Egypt. It's even interesting that he uses here Shaba, your hosts, your multitudes. Shaba is a term that God very seldom applies to humankind. In this one place, it is applicable. It really isn't applicable applied to humans and other places. Now, why is it applicable here? Why can he call the children of Israel Shaba here? Because the concept of Shaba is the same concept that is the administration over Yahweh's Malach. His spiritual messengers, his envoys, the individuals that we call by the misnomer angels, that these spiritual envoys, Yahweh routinely refers to as Shaba. You know, you read in your English translation, the Lord of Hosts. It's Yahweh of Shaba. And the Shaba speak of a regimen that operate under command and control. Why? Because there's no free will amongst the Malach. They are less than we are with regard that they do not have free will. Without free will, they cannot love. Without free will, they cannot be inventive. They're hugely restricted without free will. It's just like a soldier in the U.S. military. They relinquish their free will. Oh, they can choose to rebel, but that choice is instantly dealt with either their imprisonment, their being fined, or if the offense was egregious enough, they can be killed. Well, in Mitzrayim, the very place that Yahweh was freeing them from, they were under the command and control of the religious and political leadership of that country. So they were Shaba then, but then they were brought out, it says, Yasha, from the realm of the crucible of Egypt. And they ceased being Shaba at that time. Now they became God's children, able to exercise free will. It was an entirely different construct. God says, closely examine and carefully consider, the Hebrew word shamar, the verb shamar, which means to observe, those things which are associated with this day throughout your generation's household and lives. It is an eternal prescription for living. How much more clear could God be? He's saying that unyeasted bread, matzah, is foundational. It is the day where those who were Shaba, under the command and control of a religious and political leader, a military leader, an economic leader, that those who were under his command and control were brought out. They were freed from this realm of the crucible of Egypt. And so he says, in that context, knowing that this is the day that I freed you, matzah, carefully examine and closely consider those things which are associated with this day forever throughout all of your generations, all of your household, all of your lives. Why? Because this day now represents an olam tshuka, an eternal prescription for living. Tshuka is one of, and obvious sometimes it's written as choke. Tshuka is one of the three things that Yahweh and those who were inspired to speak on behalf of his Torah tell us that we should focus upon. There's tshuka, there's mitzvot, and there's mitzvah. Those are the three things that God, in general terms, wants us to focus upon in our observations of the Torah. Now, he tells us, I want you to observe matzah. That's what he did right here. I want you to observe the things that are associated with matzah. And then he comes back and says, I want you to consider everything associated with this day because it is a tshuka. Or sometimes you'll use choke, which is the masculine version. There are three things that God uses as a summary of those things that we ought to pay attention to. The beauty of the 119th Psalm, which is a song completely devoted to teaching us how to observe Yahweh's Torah. The tshuka are prescriptions for living. They're clearly communicated recommendations of what we should do to live that are engraved and written, chiseled into stone, and specifically designed to cut us into the covenant relationship. Similarly, the mitzvah, the second of these three concepts, it represents the terms and conditions of that covenant because there are terms and conditions associated with it. If you want to have a relationship with God, he has delineated what he expects from us, and then he has promised what he's going to give in return. The third concept that constantly is brought up by Yahweh that we should focus upon is mitzvot. Mitzvot is the means to exercise good judgment about God's just means to resolve disputes. Matzah is not only a mitzvot, a means that God uses to resolve the dispute and the contentiousness of sin, of rebellion against him. It is also a tshuka because it is a prescription for living.
It's time.
Shattering this, I am your host, Yada. Our number is 877-376-45. Before we return here to Yahweh's presentation of matzah as a essential day, as a day that defines his prescription for living, that cuts us into his covenant agreement that shall endure for all time. We have a caller from Louisiana, Jack, who I think has been with the program either once or twice before, and he's got a question regarding the Malach. Hello, Jack. Welcome back to the program.
Hi. My question is if the Malach, or angels, however you want to say it, has no feelings, if they have no feelings, if one of them occupies a human body, could they then access feelings through the human flesh?
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting question. It's Malach. Malach is the Hebrew word for messenger. That's how they became errantly known as angels, because Christianity has an enormously larger influence over our society than does Yahweh's Torah. And the Greek word for messenger is agelos, and that was crudely transliterated to create angel. So the term is Malach. It is a spiritual messenger, a spiritual envoy. And just to preface the bit of background before I answer your question directly, or at least attempt to, is that the reason that we know that that they do not have free will is because Yahweh always refers to his Malach as Shabbat. And the term Shabbat defines them as being in a command and control environment, very similar to being in the U.S. military. And, of course, their actions are controlled by Yahweh. You know, an example of that is when I agreed to write Tea with Terrace and Prophet of Doom, God promised Moloch protection. I don't see them, but he promised that they would serve as protection so I could do something that has caused everyone else who's attempted it to die and to be hunted and to have to go into hiding. I'm able to do it publicly and under my name, and yet I have, in the face of 10,000 death threats, have never been personally assaulted. So this is the nature of these beings. They just do what God tells them to do. Now, that's like in the military, of course, that the lack of free will does not mean that you can't rebel. You can rebel, but there's an immediate consequence, which is why the distinction, if you will, between the free will. Now, if you don't have free will, then you can't love. You can't be inventive. There's lots of limitations that these Moloch have. We like to present in our stories angels being all loving and caring and super sweet and all. It's just a complete corruption of their nature. Now, is it possible that a Moloch that possesses an individual could then usurp the feelings of that individual? I guess the reason I tried to answer or at least go about your question by explaining their nature as opposed to a direct answer is, I quite honestly don't have an answer for that. I don't know. You know, we have no instances of demon possession in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. We have several times, maybe at least two times, where we have a eyewitness account telling us that Yosha confronted them. Now, we have Paul speaking about them as well, but Paul was possessed by Hasatan, or one of Hasatan's demons by his own admission. So that isn't very helpful. But I suspect that the answer is no. I don't think that while they can damn and demean and play havoc with a human soul, I don't think that their purpose in occupying a human soul is so that they can feel emotions. So my guess is no, but we're not given any clear instructions as to whether or not that's true.
Okay, then. I had to ponder on that because I was wondering, why would it stay? Why wouldn't it just occupy and kill the body? Why would it stay in there? What would it have to gain if it didn't have some kind of feeling or emotion through it?
Yeah, you know, the thing that's kind of interesting is that there are instances of demonic possession of individuals where the demon and therefore one of Satan's Moloch gains a great deal by possessing that soul. Muhammad, by his own admission, was demon possessed. Paul, by his own admission, and so these individuals became very effective spokespeople for Satan and for demonic religious schemes. So that's the principal reason he would do it, is to influence.
What's that?
Hello, and welcome back to Shattering Myths. Let's reprise what God just said, because I think it bears one additional comment. He said, "A closely examine and carefully consider," which is to observe, shamar, "those things which are associated with matzah," which is unyeasted bread. "Because on this essential and foundational day," so matzah is essential, it is foundational, it is substantial day, "your hosts, your multitudes, were brought out of the realm of the crucible of Egypt. They were therefore freed. Carefully examine, therefore consider and observe, those things which are associated with this day throughout your generations and household, throughout your lives and period of time. It is an eternal olam prescription for living, inscribed so that this instruction cuts you into the covenant relationship. Now, what's important about this day is that on Sunday of this week, yesterday, millions of people were celebrating a Babylonian holiday named in the honor of the Babylonian goddess Ishtar, called Easter. And they did so, of course, on a Sunday morning during sunrise in most cases. And what it's not only that for billions, a pagan Babylonian holiday, the very thing that God in the first instruction to participate in his covenant said, you need to walk away from Babylon. You need to walk away from your country, which was Babylon, which God goes to great lengths saying, do not emulate any of the political and religious customs of the Babylonians. And yet they were celebrating a Babylonian festival, the day where the Mother Earth is impregnated by the sun on the vernal equinox. And they were ascribing this to the mythical individual that they have created, kind of like Teo's, the Notre Dame football player's mythical girlfriend. And yet, not a single one of them knew what to do with the Sabbath. None of them were aware that it was unleavened bread that was the essential day. There's not a Christian in the world that celebrates unleavened bread. There's not one that observes it. There's not one that considers it. And yet, the essential day, the day that is the prescription for living, is matzah. And not one celebrates it. It was the most important of the 3 days that Yahusha enabled on our behalf in 33 CE, and yet it is routinely disavowed. You know, the Catholic Church and Orthodox Christians will celebrate Maundy Day Thursday, not recognizing that in 33 CE that was simply Passover. Yahusha ate the Passover meal with his disciples, but they won't. They make it sound like it's the basis for their communion in Eucharist, totally disassociated from Passover. Then they celebrate Good Friday as if Friday was relevant. It wasn't relevant. What was relevant is that it was still Passover because the day begins at sundown and continues through sunset. But they never make the association. They call it Good Friday. Won't even call that Passover. But yet when it comes to the Shabbat of Matzah, nothing. Radio silence. Completely unaware of what it represents. And yet it's the day that we were freed from religious and political corruption in the crucible of Egypt. That's what it represents. Freedom. It's the day that we are redeemed. And it is a prescription for living forever. And yet the 1.5 billion Christians ignore it. How in the world can you think, you can't think, but why would you believe that you are doing something that is pleasing to God when you're ignoring what he says and doing the opposite of what he wants? God's instructions in this regard are so simple. It becomes clear that yeast is a metaphor for something far more important, and that the essential and empowering nature of the invitation to be called out of unyeasted bread isn't based on what little is required for us, which is to eat bread without yeast, but instead upon what God would do and now has done for us on this day. This is an interesting statement that comes next from Yahweh. It is the reason my view of this celebration has evolved over time, and I'm going to read it, and then I'm going to share with you my conclusion. I'm not going to try to sell you on my conclusion. I just want to share it. God said, in the first and foremost month, time of renewal, month is from Kodesh, it means time of renewal. This month happens to be Abib. It is the time when young barley sprouts forth the grain, which is symbolic of saved souls, but the grain is still green and growing and thus receptive. And that's essential, because unless you are growing, unless you enjoy this voyage of discovery that we're on, unless you are receptive to God's word, then his teaching will have no influence on you. So the timing was important. So in the first month, on the 14th day at sundown, you shall eat bread without yeast until sunset on the 21st day of that month. Well, the 14th day at sunset is Passover. And now God is saying that this is unyeasted bread. It's matzah. And the reason he's saying that is because Pesach, matzah, and Bikurim are one event, played out over the course of 3 days and actually celebrated for seven, but it's one event. He has just now incorporated Passover with unleavened bread in this statement. In the first month, on the 14th day at sundown, you are to eat bread without yeast. You are to matzah. And so Passover is part of matzah, of bread without yeast. And you're to do so until sunset on the 21st day of the month. Now, my conclusion from this is that since we are encouraged to eat matzah on Passover, that you don't celebrate the 7 days beginning with matzah and eat the actual day of matzah, which is the day after Passover, that doesn't start the clock on the 7 days. The clock on the 7 days that we're instructed to eat matzah begins with Pesach on the 14th day. Now, the beginning of the 14th day is actually at sunset at the 13th day, because a sunset on the 14th day begins the 15th day. So this year, as I looked at the information that is available to everyone who wishes to consider it for themselves, which if you go to yadaya.com and you go to the invitations volume and you click on the last chapter of that volume, which is Mikre, you'll find charts that have been provided by a very good friend of mine who presented for every year between now and the time that Yahweh returns, when the various movements of the sun and the renewing light on the moon occur, so that you can determine for yourself when to celebrate Passover. I came to the conclusion, based upon the evidence that was provided there, that it would be celebrated on Tuesday evening at sunset. So I will continue to eat bread without yeast until sunset on Tuesday, making it fully 7 days. The removal of sin from our bodies is a serious affair with eternal ramifications that only Yahusha could solve, and Yahusha is Yahweh, a diminished manifestation of Yahweh. He says, and this is, again, still in Yahweh's voice. By the way, before I read this, I received an email that I read as the show was progressing this morning from an individual that I will respond to. He may even be listening to the show now, that says that, you know, to have a better background on the whole history and story of the Bible, he tuned into the History Channel's presentation of the Bible, something I did not watch because it would just make me angry. And he said that The seminal event in the history of the book that is misnamed the Bible, from Yah's perspective, it's the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. But the single most important aspect of this story, far more important than any other aspect of the story, is when Yahweh handed down the Torah on Shavuot, which is the next celebration, the next day, the feast that we're going to celebrate with Yah. On Shavuot, Yahweh dictated the Torah to Moshe on Mount Horeb, which is in western Arabia. It is God giving us his teaching is the single most important part of his revelation of his testimony. And yet on this show, which was many, many, many episodes long, I mean hours upon hours long, guess what they left out? According to this email, they didn't even show Yahweh giving the Torah to Moshe. It wasn't even mentioned. Well, speaking of what Yahweh asked Moshe to write down, this is being delivered in Yahweh's voice. This is Yahweh speaking, Moshe acting as the scribe. 7 days, Sheba, which is based upon Saba, which is a sworn oath to affirm the truth, promising to do something. 7 days, there shall be no leavening yeast found in your homes. Indeed, any soul who consumes anything leavened shall be cut off and banished from the community of Yisrael, from the eternal witness of Yisrael, including foreigners and natives of the land. The instruction is quite clear. God asked us to observe and closely examine every aspect of this, and he says 7 days should be no leavening yeast, no yeast found in your homes. Why? Because the whole purpose of matzah is to remove yeast from our souls. Yeast is a fungus. It produces carbon dioxide, which is deadly when it replaces oxygen. And God is saying that this element of decay shall not be in your homes, because the whole purpose of matzah is to make you perfect. And so it's played out over 7 days, because the steps we take to Yahweh are played out over 7 days, where we become his perfect children, immortal, and able to live in his company. And so that is the meaning of matzah. Segment of Shattering Myths for today. There are additional insights in this discussion from Yahweh, who just happens to be God, who just happens to have introduced himself in this very Torah, who just happens to have presented his covenant in this very Torah, the only place where you can learn about its terms and conditions, the only place that he presents the plan that we can walk to him and become immortal, become perfect, become adopted to children in his family, become enriched by all that he is giving us, be empowered by him. It is the only place where these things are presented and can be understood. And he has said that if you consume food, and this is based upon hametz, particularly bread, which is has yeast in it, you shall be cut off and banished from the enduring assembly of the witness of Yisrael, Eda Yisrael. Now, what that means is that cut was karat. When God cut the covenant, he karat the covenant. And so karat is the edge of this dividing line, that you're either with God or not with him. You're estranged from him. And it falls right there on the covenant as to whether or not you're participating in the covenant or not. And as an essential part of participating in the covenant, we must walk to God and become perfect. That walk is the walk of matzah. And so if we do not benefit from Pesach and matzah, one event and Bokurim, we cannot participate in the covenant. And so God is saying, if you choose not to participate in this, and you just go merrily along eating your bread with yeast, that you will be cut off from the community. The community is Ida, which means enduring witness of Yisrael. Yisrael is a compound of Ish, Sarah, and El. Ish is the Hebrew word for individual. Sarah means to strive, to struggle, to persist, to endure, to engage, to persevere, and to be empowered. El is the title of God. So it's individuals who exist and endure with God. You ignore his instructions on this essential day because you don't want to take the time to observe what he has to say, or you just don't like his Torah, then understand you're estranged from him. Now, he also ends this, he says, including foreigners and natives of the land. Now, there's only three groups of people from Yah's perspective. There is Yisrael, which are his children. Those are his chosen people. There are people who were native to the land of Yisrael, who were not Yehudim, who were not Israelites. Now, they have all ceased to exist. There are no more Phoenicians. There are no more Canaanites or Jebusites. There are no more Philistines. But when he gave his instructions, there were. And he also says foreigners. That's the three things. You can be a foreigner, foreign to Israel. You can be Israel, or you can be a native to that land, and that's no longer possible. And that's the three possibilities. And he's saying that the consequence of not participating in matzah is equivalent for all of them. It's amazing with this kind of testimony that so many people have been beguiled into believing that Passover, unleavened bread, and first fruits, even if they know the names, matzah, Pesach, matzah, and bakurim, that they automatically said that's only for the Jews, that's being Jewish. God says it's for everybody, the foreigners, the natives, and for Yisrael. It's for everybody. And he didn't just say it was for everybody. Here, he also said the same thing using Dor in the previous statement. It says it's an eternal prescription for living throughout your generations, households and lives, homes, dwelling places, and periods of time. God's made this as clear as words allow. Now, here he has used two different words to translate the concept of yeast in this passage. The first is sa'ar, which is has the concept of retaining something. In this case, he's using it to imply the retaining of sin. In this case, the word sa'ar speaks of that which sours our souls. He speaks of leaving it behind so that we are spared. Explaining the purpose of this essential day. We will return to and conclude our discussion of unleavened bread, of unyeasted bread, of this essential day that cuts us into the covenant relationship, this prescription for living, during our program tomorrow.
What's safer and cheaper than prescription drugs?
Glad you asked. The answer is renovation teas. Herbal remedies are much safer and much cheaper than prescription drugs.